All right, welcome back. I'm your host, Dr. Tart. You're listening to Heart to Heart with Dr. Tart, sponsored by Verizon Wireless. We're here at Clark Atlanta, the Clark Atlanta University. My distinguished guests this evening are Tomiko Lawry-Pugh and Kimya Motley. We're talking about how to recognize and leave toxic and abusive relationships. Before the break, we talked about what to do when it comes to teenagers. And we talked about what impact growing up in a toxic relationship does to your kind of your signal caller when it comes to being able to recognize what's healthy and what's unhealthy. What I want to do now is I want to talk about when you first realize that the relationship is toxic. When did the light bulb go off where you said, whoa, this is unhealthy and not good. This is not the norm. I don't need to be in this anymore. When did that happen, and what made the light bulb go off?
You know, Dr. Tart, it's sad to say that I think I was, even though there were things going on, okay, he hit me in 2008, I still dismissed it. That it was part of our relationship. Several incidents happened, and there was really no light bulb. I had one friend that would try to talk to me and say, hey, you know, he's dangerous, but you know, you think it's not going to happen to you. And then my turning point came actually, I think, 2 months before the shooting. I had some friends sit me down, and she used God against me. And she said, you know, you always go around saying that, you know, you love God and all of that. Well, he didn't call you to be afraid, and you're afraid of him, aren't you? And I had to admit, yes, I was. And I said, you know what? You're right. If God be for me, who dares stand against me? I'm going to once and for all. I mean, because I tried, you know, to say that I didn't want to be with him. But at that point, I realized, okay, they're sitting me down.
Hold on. I want to tap into that right there. You said you tried. You tried to leave. What made that difficult?
Initially, he used religion against me. He would say, it's supposed to be till death do us part. It's a sin to get a divorce. God is not going to forgive you. And because I have a strong relationship with God, I thought what he was saying, you know, was true. He would use that submission scripture against me. And then after I got past that, it took a long while for me to get past that to when I would actually say, you know, we need to get a divorce. He would do little things to threaten me. And it was just enough to make me not say I wanted to get a divorce. Because like I said, he hit me once in 2008, well, actually twice in that year. But he never put his hands on me again until he shot us in 2011. But those two hits were enough to keep me in line. Just threaten that you're going to do something. And I would back off from saying that I wanted to, you know, to separate.
Well, I'm starting to get it now. He took areas that were core to you, your relationship with God, and then took scriptures, misapplied, and used them against you. Because
yes.
We all know it doesn't say submit under all circumstances. There's multiple conditions to submission.
Right.
You know, you're supposed to submit to a man that submits to God. That means that he's treating you like God would treat you. So there's a mutual submission. I just wanted to throw that out there
yes.
for people that use that against that. They need to actually look at both. Their qualifications for men and women are both partners when it comes to submission. We have a call. We have a call that I want to take, and then we're going to come back, okay? Because I want to hear what you have to say. Natalie and Conyers, you're on with Dr. Tart, Heart to Heart with Dr. Tart. How you doing, Natalie?
I'm doing great.
All right. What's your question or comment today?
Well, I kind of have a comment. I'm going to turn off my speaker. I think it's
echo. All right, speak up. I can't hear you, Natalie.
Okay. I actually have a comment. And
okay, so we're having some technical issues. We'll see if we can pull you back up. But before we went to that phone call, Kimmy, you were getting ready to say something, and I went to the phone call. I'm sorry.
Yes, it's very important for churches, too, to become aware of these signs because the church that I was attending at the time actually had a support group for domestic violence survivors. And I went to talk to them about what was going on, and they told me, you're not being abused. My husband had been diagnosed with an illness. And actually, that was the onset of him starting to behave in violent ways. So I was more or less told to submit more, to take care of him more, to pray more, because I was not being abused.
But so, based on what?
What
was
them.
Their definition of abuse, if that's not it?
Well, he had never been abusive before. I had not seen any signs. We dated for a year, and there was no abuse. We were married for a year, and there was no abuse. He didn't say anything verbally. He never hit me. I can't even recall an argument, okay? So that's something, too. You need to see. You need to be involved in an argument before, you know, you commit. But nevertheless, because I told them that, and like I said, his violent episodes came about once he was diagnosed with this illness, that they said, well, that has to do with the illness and you're not being empathetic enough. And, you know, maybe you should pray more, submit more, all of that stuff.
Did they recommend resources for him?
No.
All right. So once again, when we start talking about how to actually help, one of the recommendations I heard you say, you alluded to it, was actually listen. You actually have to listen to what's going on versus just a blanket statement you need to submit under all circumstances. And I think that, too, this is a call to action to churches to really get training when it comes to how to do counseling. Now, this is a hotbed issue for me and 100% responsible of why I have, you know, I'm in ministry school right now. It's because I want to merge counseling with ministry, because the church is a place we go for help, but we're not getting the training that's necessary, because I see that's one way where things could have been diverted. Before we come to you, Tamiko, we have Natalie and Conyers back on the line. Natalie, sorry about that.
Hi. Is this better?
Oh, my goodness. That's 10 times better.
Okay.
What's your comment, Natalie?
Well, first, thank you guys for sharing. I just commend you for just bringing up this topic and really talking about it. It has hit home for me because my daughter has dealt with this. And
how old is she?
A close friend.
How old
my daughter is in her 30s.
And
so we've never had violence in my house. My husband and I have been married for over 30 years. So it can happen to anyone. And the things that happened for us was when she first started dealing with this young man, he wouldn't meet us. So I already knew in my heart something was not right. And maybe within the first, you know, couple of years, everything was kind of okay, or at least we didn't know. But he still was isolating her from her friends. He didn't want her to go to the things that she would go to, and her friends are her high school friends, and you know, and she's a very strong young lady.
Mm-hmm.
And so that got her too, like, how do I not have the kind of marriage that my mom and dad have and be okay? And I think that led to some denial too, because she was trying to do counseling and trying to get him to go and all kind of different things. And her being raised in the church too and having her faith, you know, she was like, I can do this, I can do it. But we never knew, but deep down I knew. And then when he did get violent, you know, thank God, of course, she got away from it. But
how? How did she get away, Natalie?
I kind of don't want to say too much about her stuff because I'm sharing her story.
Did she call a hotline? Did she go to a shelter?
She got to move because of her situation. Her job moved.
Okay.
Right? But in the situation, she wouldn't have gotten a move, but the job moved, and he ended up having to be somewhere different. And in that time frame, it's like she could get herself together and get it figured out and you know, talk to me. And it still didn't really get that she got to talk to me, but he did get violent, and she was hurt really bad. And the denial was, he even sent me a little note saying this big, long story about what could happen, and it was not true. And to this day, my daughter, we still have not really been able to talk about it.
Well, Natalie, I commend you for your story. What did you say or do to help and stay supportive of your daughter and not be judgmental?
Just, and not of him either. Just when I needed to show up, I showed up. When I needed to just love the two of them, I just did. But I would not allow her to stay in that situation. And I just let her talk. If she couldn't talk, I just let her know that we were there. And also make sure that her friends stayed close, and her friends still talked to her, and her friends, no matter what, and all her friends knew. She has very close friends. The friends knew. And after the fact, you know, we could all a little bit talk about it.
Okay.
It's a very scary thing.
Natalie, thank you so much. Thank you so much. That testimony was powerful. And to clarify, I think what she was saying was she got enough information to be supportive of her daughter and who she was dating. And then once she realized that it was toxic, she had her exit that relationship. Now, let me be clear on this when we start talking about strategy. A lot of times people get upset when you don't listen to them the first time, right? Because it makes them feel helpless. And one important key in getting someone to leave a toxic environment is that you have to help them to replace what they're losing with something else. When you take something away, the person feels empty, even if it's something negative. You have to replace the negative with something positive. So let's shed some light on this about how big of a problem this is. 1 in 4 women will experience domestic violence in her lifetime. If we go back to talking about teens, I just want to throw this out. 73% of teenagers said that they would turn to a friend for help, but only a third, 33%, who have been through it or knew about an abusive relationship said they've told anyone about it. So what that means is that there are teenagers that have heard about this from a friend, see this on their Instagram, see this on their Kick, see this on their social media, or hear about it. A friend has talked to them, and they have failed to report it to anyone to help that friend get out of that relationship. So that's something that I want the listening audience to really be aware of. All right, before we take a call, I want to talk about safety plans. All right, once you figure out I have to get out of this, my friends have sat me down, like you said, Kimia. I'm now seeing things differently, which is what friends do. They help keep that perspective, because remember, you're manipulated all day. Mm-hmm. You need the support of friends to bring you back to reality. Talk about developing a safety plan and provide some resources when you're done about what men and women can do to exit. So let's start with what made you realize I need to get out, and what's, give me step A through Z.
Well, I actually learned about a safety plan after I left the abusive relationship, which is how I learned step number one, which is never tell your abuser I'm leaving you. Because at that point, they feel like they've lost control. And that's where I made my mistake. I said, I'm leaving you today. And he was like, oh, I'm going to kill you today. And so that's when it got violent and the whole incident happened, you know, when I was on Interstate 85. So rule number one, do not tell your abuser I'm leaving you. You really have to take some time out and go to maybe a professional organization. Our organization, the Still Standing Foundation, helps you put together a personalized safety plan based on your specific situation. So everybody's safety plan is going to be different.
How do they reach Still Standing Foundation?
They can reach the Still Standing Foundation via our website, www.thestillstandingfoundation.org, or you can give us a call at 754-77-STAND. 754-777-8263.
All right. And what do they do? When they call, what happens?
So when they call, someone will assess the call, take that down their information. A lot of times people call because they just need someone to talk to at that moment. But if they want to put together a domestic violence safety plan, we get somebody on the phone to help them with that. And I can just go over a few quick tips. Just
please
generalized
do.
Tips. Like I said, the first one is do not let tell your abuser I'm leaving you. You always want to have important phone numbers nearby for you and your children for emergency purposes. Find out if you need to have several ways to get out of your house safely. Front door, back door, is there a window that's cracked open that I could get out of? Also, if you have children, your children should have a code word. And so for me, my code word was helicopter. So if I said helicopter, my kids know it's time to go. When I say helicopter, it was time for us. That means we're leaving today. Or if I pick up the phone and I call my neighbor and I say, hey, I would like to order a pizza. That means I need help.
Okay.
And so you have to develop different codes. And so those are just a few of the things. I'm trying to think, have a set of keys, an extra set of keys, maybe in the garage or somewhere in the car, an extra set of clothing, birth certificates, identification, things like that. You want to already have it in a safe place where you can just grab it.
Kimi, I see you want to add tips as well, and I want to give a resource, and then we'll take a call.
Well, she did an awesome job of giving the tips. The only thing that I was thinking about personally is the same thing, like she said, I did not have a safety plan. I had one friend, the same friend who had been telling me all along that he was dangerous, to tell me about safety plans, and I thought she was speaking Greek, like, I don't need that, you know. It didn't become concrete or apparent to me, oh, that's what I needed, until after the shooting. And just like Tomiko said as well, I told him I want a divorce. Because he was staying with his parents. He had moved back in with them. I said, what is your mother's address? I'm going to have you served, blah, blah, blah. So that triggered, you know, all of that stuff to happen. So when she said, make sure you have a safety plan, I'm over here shaking my head. Yes, don't do anything without that first.
All right, Tomiko and Akemia, where can they go? So I'm a woman, I'm a man, I'm in this right now. I need to go. But I have kids, I have nowhere to stay, I have no money, or my money is being controlled by someone. Where can they go right now? What resource can you give to them right now if they need? I know one of the ones that I have listed is domesticshelters.org. That's domesticshelters.org. I believe you put in your zip code, and they help you find local shelters in the area. How can they contact the shelter?
Well, that resource that you gave is an awesome resource. It's one that we use because you can, like you said, put your zip code in and it will pull up all the shelters within so many miles radius of where you are. And then it also provides numbers. So you can call that shelter, you know, to see if they have room available for you. But one thing that it's really imperative that they should know is when you call, and if they, for whatever reason, tell you they don't have room for you, don't get off that phone. They are supposed to assist you with finding another place. So, 'cause I know for me, I tried to get into a shelter one time. I was told there wasn't any room, and I was so discouraged. I was not picking up that phone to call anyone else, because you don't know the amount of courage that it takes to muster up to do that. So that's the one thing that I tell people now. They're supposed to help you find a place, even if they do not have room. So do not get off that phone with them. Say, you know, I need you to help me locate a place, and they will.
And one of the things that I know, because I used to work in a safe house, all right? One of the things you should know is that the address is not going to be given, okay? The address is not going to be given. You have to call and get a location, because if it's out there, they know where to find you. Mm-hmm. So it's a safe house. And so call and get that number. Don't be discouraged if you don't see an address. That's the whole point. Call and figure out where you can go safely. And a lot of them do take children, because that was what I did as a psychologist. I treated children there. We have Terrence in Atlanta on the phone that wants to chime in. If you have calls, I mean, if you have comments or questions, you need more resources, or you have resources, give us a call, 404-880-9255. This is Dr. Tartt, and you're listening to Heart to Heart with Dr. Tartt. Terrence, you're on with Dr. Tartt, Tomiko, and Kemia. What's your question or comment?
Hello?
Yes. Hey, Terrence, how are you?
Hey, yes. First of all, I want to say that I really appreciate you for addressing this and allowing people to call in. I grew up in an abusive home. I had three older brothers and two older sisters, and the trauma and the anger, stress involved in growing up in that environment is traumatic. And I think a lot of times, and I really appreciate the fact that you talked about the teenage, you know, abusive relationship, because if young men grow up in these households and they become abusive, a lot of times they don't even realize they have these issues. And I think as a society and a community, it's our responsibility to, when we see that, to try to get them help when they're young so they don't grow into abusive adults. Because fortunately, I was not, myself and none of my brothers turned out to be abusive. But one of the things that I do is when I saw friends, and I have had friends who were abusive, immediately those of us who were friends with them would try to pull them aside and get them to see, hey, you got some issues here, man. You need to deal with it. You got some anger problems. And, you know, you're putting your family at risk, because I know what it's like growing up in that. I know what the children go through. I know what the wife goes through. And, again, I think it's really a big responsibility that, it's important for the women to get away, but also we need to try to heal that problem, because hurting people hurt people. And I think, again, as a community, especially a community of men, we need to be responsible and police each other to try to help each other get help. And sometimes you're right. They're beyond help, and they need to be put away or locked up so they can't hurt anybody.
Terrence,
but
I want to thank you.
When they can't be rehabilitated, we
Terrence,
need more
we're, up
resources.
A, we're up against a break. Terrence, I want to thank you for that. I didn't want to run out of time without thanking you for being a beacon of light and for being an example of what men should do. When you have a friend and you see that his idea of relationships are toxic or controlling, you need to talk to him. You need to not come up from area of judgment, but let them know, hey, man, you have some issues that you need to address. And then the second point before we go to the break is that, listen, as a community, whenever police are called into domestic violence situations and you see kids there, those kids need to be referred to counseling ASAP so they can see that this is not the norm, that mom and dad, you know, or mom and boyfriend, dad and boyfriend, whatever it is, go to jail and come back, they still do what they do. They need treatment in the interim to figure out, hey, this is a toxic environment. Otherwise, we're allowing kids to grow up and see that and for it to be normalized. When we come back with our special guest, we're going to talk about how to exit, and we're going to talk about what to say to you maybe a few years ago when you were going through this that would have gotten you out. What did you need to hear? All right. When you come back, you're listening to Heart with Dr. Tart. Phone number is 404-880-9255. Tune in. We'll be right back.